Good morning, and here we go again. It's another Thursday edition of The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack, across from me is Jim, and we're here to bring you it's a nice February 8th is what it is.
It's a deceptive February the 8th because, boy, outside, I swear I'm going to see crocuses and daffodils coming up. It is just beautiful.
It is like spring out there. I chucked the sweater this morning. No sweater.
Oh, how brave of you.
We've gone into, yeah, and you're in short sleeves, Jim.
Not in shorts, though. But I did a little token to spring on Monday, I think. I have five little glass vases in the windows, and I put hyacinth bulbs in them. And the first batch grew and bloomed, and the kitchen area just smelled heavenly with hyacinths. And so I threw those out, put those in the compost pile, and now I've got, you can't use those bulbs again.
Oh.
Once you force them, they're no good.
Huh.
They've said, I'm done with blooming, I'm done with that part of my life. And so they become compost. So I put five new bulbs in. And I don't know what color they're going to be, but it takes about 4 to 5, maybe 6 weeks for the whole process.
Wow.
Have you ever done anything like that?
No, I have not.
I'm going to turn to, we have Corey and Brenda with us. We're going to introduce them. Have you guys ever done anything like that in the windows?
No.
Oh, you should. I mean, it's sort of like, this is like spring-like, but when it's snowing outside and you've got about 2 feet of snow outside and you look on your windowsill and it's like the promise of spring and you sort of believe that this won't last forever. But you're absolutely correct, Jack, that today is...
Yeah, it's. I rode my bike down here just in no sweater, just my vest and
It's not going to last, though. I have a feeling that there's still going to be some stuff happening.
So what I have outside my house, there's something green coming up, right?
It's called grass.
Well, okay. All right. Yeah. All right. I wonder if that's going to...
It depends. You know, I've got stuff coming up in the backyard, and I can't tell if it's carryover from last fall that didn't get browned out, I'm even noticing some green stuff on my irises. So, they do that stuff all year round. So, you know, it could be a fake spring.
Yes, a false spring. It is going to be rainy today. I know those of you who weren't listening to the weather report during Democracy Now! We'll just briefly fill you in. There's an increasing chance of showers, increasing to 90% as the day goes on. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Chance of showers, then chance of rain or snow tonight because it's going to get down to 25 degrees. So spring hasn't really arrived yet.
Well, I talked with my brother in Billings, which is just over the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're having, you know, blustery winter weather and snow is on the way and just all sorts of February things.
Yeah, we don't have that. We have March here.
Even April.
Yeah. Anyway, today's the high day. It's 47 or will be 47 degrees today, sort of spring-like, but then cooling down. Highs of 34 and in the mid-30s for the rest of the week and throughout the weekend. Chance of rain and snow, and then snow predicted, though not too much as the weekend moves along. And that's that. That's the weather report.
Okay, well, we don't want our skiing friends to be walking around with too long faces, you know, because this is the time to be up on the mountain. But the time now is to be in the studio with our two guests with us this morning. We have Corey Holman, and she is the Sandpoint City Manager for the Mountain States Early Head Start Program. Good morning, Corey.
Good morning.
And with her is Brenda Hammond, and Brenda is a mental health specialist with the program. Brenda, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it's good to have you both here. And there was a big article on December 10th on the Early Head Start program. And it was something that was news to me. And I think you're the one, Corey, who said we're a well-kept secret.
We are a well-kept secret.
Well, good. Well, let's Keep that secret. How's that? Can we do that? Let's unkeep that secret. Corey, let's start with just in very general, broad terms. What is the Early Head Start program?
Well, the Early Head Start program is a federally funded program out of the Office of Human and Health Services. And what it is it's kind of a takeoff from Head Start. It was developed, 20 or so years ago in our community. And what we do is home visiting services for low-income families.
Okay. And Brenda, tell us the difference, if you can, between, I'm sure many people have heard Head Start, mm-hmm. but Early Head Start, the differences between the programs.
Well, Early Head Start started in 1964 as part of the War on Poverty. And President Johnson was, it was an attempt to kind of level the playing field for low-income families and to give children a head start so that they would be able to be ready for school. And then it was in 1995 that further research on the brain and how children develop pointed out the importance of the early years. The first 3 years of a child's life are the foundation for school readiness, actually, and for much of what is going to happen in that child's life, because their brain is being wired and developed. And so it's so important that a child during, from pregnancy through the first 3 years, have support. So in 1995, Early Head Start was founded as a federal program to support pregnant moms and families with children up to the age of 3. And so our Early Head Start program here in Sandpoint, actually we're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, and Corey will tell you more about that, but we started in 1998 here in Sandpoint.
The original Head Start program, when did a child begin that?
At what age?
Yeah.
Generally 4 and 5.
Okay, so there was that gap there.
Mm-hmm.
So what, I don't know if you could answer this, what brought on Early Head Start? Was there research? Was there, investigation in terms of the cognitive skills developed?
Yeah, there was research that was showing that early relationships with children is what supports their school readiness, because Head Start and Early Head Start are school readiness programs. And so knowing that, it was an opportunity for families and parents and children to get support in school readiness.
So this isn't, I mean, it's not, you don't sit down and teach them their ABCs necessarily. You're socializing with them. You're just...
How we support our families is we do weekly home visits. And so we go into the home for an hour and a half a week, and we work with the parent on developing a strong relationship with their child around school readiness. So we know that relationship is important, and children will be more successful if they have good relationships with their parents. And so we go and work through the parent to get to the child to support that relationship.
Ah. Well, that phrase that Jack used, and you just used, school readiness, many people might think, like what Jack was suggesting, oh, we'll start with the alphabet at age 1. But really, you're talking about not necessarily skill sets that will be developed in, you know, like, let's say, math, early math, or spelling, or that sort of thing. But you're talking about, like, let's say, building trust. Building a bond that sets the foundation for school readiness.
Exactly. And it starts prenatally. So it's that bonding, that mom who's pregnant with that child, being able to bond and respond and reflect on what's happening with the child once the child's born, being able to respond to cues, helping the child to regulate. Those early things are important for a child to be able to go and sit in a classroom and listen or do work at a desk. So being able to have those skills early on are really important.
Has research been done about cognitive skills being developed in utero, with before the baby is born?
Yeah, there's been research that shows that before the baby's born, they can they're hearing sounds, that they can feel feelings. If the mom is experiencing any kind of emotion, that it affects the child. So there is early triggers for that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to play Mozart, right? Isn't that the idea?
and read Shakespeare.
Yeah, read lots of books. Letting that infant know that there's a voice out there that when they come out, they'll be able to recognize and have a parent that responds to them. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You actually do. You read. You're supposed to read aloud and.
Yeah.
Wow. Get them to recognize you. That's interesting. So when do you first meet with a mother to be of a.
Well, we get referrals from people in the community, a lot of word of mouth. So other moms will tell families about the program. And what happens is they apply for the program and then we make contact with them and we let them know about our program and some of the things that we're required to do as a federal program. There's certain requirements by our performance standards that kind of guide our work and what we do. And then we start our home visits. And going into the homes.
Hmm. Did you say, I'm sorry, I was watching somebody turn out the lights here in the studio. Did you say when, like what, is this in the third trimester or when?
Any time during the pregnancy.
Really?
Is when we can start enrolling families. We can enroll families prenatally anytime during the pregnancy all the way up to age 3. So.
Oh, okay. And it is a... Yeah, and then what does like the process look like as it goes on? And you're working mostly with the parents. Do you actually meet the children though too?
Yeah, we're in the homes with the children, and so a lot of the work that we do is focused around child development. Relationship is the important part of the child development, but we also support families in goals that they may have for their family. Getting them resources. We look at health, nutrition screenings. We do developmental screenings with the child. So we're not actually going in as the teacher of the child. We're going in to support the parent in being the teacher to the child. So it can look different for different families, but our ultimate goal is to make sure they're ready for the next step, which is moving on to, a preschool or even waiting sometimes for kindergarten. So.
Mm-hmm. Brenda, you're the mental health specialist. Where do you come into the program?
Well, infant mental health is a term that's been used recently, and it conjures up kind of strange images of babies lying on couches, and which are all inaccurate. But infant mental health is really social emotional growth, and that starts. According to attachment theory, which is some of the research that's gone on that's kind of prompted the early Head Start program, is understanding the importance of that primary attachment that the child has with their caregiver. And it helps them to develop trust. And the social emotional skills that come from those early relationships are the foundation of those cognitive kind of skills that happen later on. So that's kind of an interesting concept, and it's something that we don't think about often when we think of school readiness, but the social emotional growth and development and the emotional intelligence that's developing is really important for the child being able to even function in a classroom, to talk to their mm-hmm. classmates, to ask them to come and play, to negotiate the kinds of things that happen in socializations. And Corey can talk more about the socializations we do have at our center, which is part of what we do for the first 3 years as well.
Going back to interacting with the child, I read somewhere, and if you asked me, I really couldn't tell you where, but beginning from day one, rather than responding to the baby with one word answers, talking to the child mm-hmm. is listening, is hearing, is assimilating, is putting together, even though the child himself or herself is not able to respond, but certainly talking to the child in complete sentences, and or talking to the child about, ooh, look at the world around, you know, things like that. Engaging the child maybe in vocal levels that they're not quite ready yet to respond back, but they're processing that.
Well, and they do respond back, I think, from day one, because they're exchanging gazes with their parent or with their primary caregiver. And there's this magical kind of, they call it serve and return, that happens even in the very earliest stages of a child's development, that they'll make a sound or they'll wiggle and they'll look at their parent and mm-hmm. the parent will respond back. And they can respond back in so many different ways. And it is important. The language development that you're talking about, but just the eye contact and that facial engagement and learning that serve and return kind of process of communication is so foundational for every relationship that that child will have the rest of its life.
It's sort of, I want to ask Corey about a typical home visit, but before I do, any of you see the new Gerber baby? Mm-hmm. It was on the news last night that they just selected the new baby for this year. Mm-hmm. And talk about the child was smiling, mm-hmm. interacting with the parents, comfortable. And I go, oh, that is just so perfect. And wasn't he just the cutest little thing you've ever seen?
Yes.
Just cute. I think he was 18 months old. Mm-hmm. But I want to ask Corey about a typical home visit. I know you said no two are the same, but what would be, let's say, I'm sure the first visit as opposed to the third visit or whatever. When you go into the home, what's your goal?
Well, our goal is to find out how their week went. So we go into the home. We talk to them about some successful things that may have happened, some celebrations that happened during the week, maybe some things that were more challenging. And then we talk about their observations of their child for the past week and see if they've noticed any growth or anything different. We talk about a lot of skills or activities that they can do with their child to increase some skills in the home, or just things that they want to see their child do differently. And then so the following week, we'll follow up on that and see how that worked out for them. We talk about a variety of things. So we could talk about the family situation, whether, you know, housing's going well or transportation. We talk about health, if they're getting prepared for their next doctor well-child visit, or if their child's had a cold and how they've been dealing with that. So the scope of what we do is basically supporting the parent in mm-hmm. what's mm-hmm. going on during that week that we haven't been there. So,
now, Brenda, do you make home visits?
I typically don't make home visits. I go on home visits when the home visitors and the families would want someone to come in, perhaps to talk about mental health issues. Something that is a reality of having babies is postpartum depression. It's a very common thing, and something that we talk about and try and be sensitive to where that mother is at each time the home visitor sees them, so that we can address it if it is an issue. So sometimes parents will want to talk with a mental health specialist and just say, you know, is what I'm feeling normal? And how concerned should I be about this? Should I be seeking the help of a mental health provider? And so I can go in and talk with them about that. I can go to a home visit also and do an observation of a child. And you typically, with the mental health specialist, it's of their interaction, their social emotional kinds of development that's going on, but talk with the parent about that, and again see if there's a need for some kind of intervention mm-hmm. to happen in the mm-hmm. home. Sometimes children are exposed to trauma in a lot of different ways, and there needs to be an intervention or something done to help them cope with that. So in those kinds of situations, I would go into the home as well with the mm-hmm. home visitor.
Of course. Now, what's the difference between the home visit and coming to the center? Or is it every other contact with it like, or is it just home, 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 center, home, home, or how does that work?
Well, our program does home visits, and along with home visits, they have the opportunity to participate in play groups. And we have a play group coordinator, Molly Fay, who sets up the environment and works closely with the home visitors to address child goals that the parents are working on to create that environment for them. And so our play groups, we're required to offer 22 play groups a year for our families. And they come on a regular schedule, and they come in and they have a snack with their child at the table. And then they are able to go in and do some teeth brushing. Then they will have an opportunity. It's like a free flow time where they're able to explore the classroom with their child. And so the parent's with the child all the time. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that, Molly facilitates a circle time where the parents are able to have songs, books read to the children, and just, you know, enjoy dancing or some activity. So
we've been talking about, I guess, when I first thought of Head Start, I did think of it as sort of an educational thing, and it's really more of a socializing kind of a thing. And when you think about school, you tend to think about the relationships between the teacher and the student, and that's it. But of course, the huge part of school for me anyway, is the relationship between students and one another. Oh my God.
The carryover of the cold.
anyway, I was wondering if you could talk at all about that, about how you, the importance, I guess, of getting children comfortable with one another as well as just with other adults.
Yeah. So when you're working with infants and toddlers, basically you're going to be doing a lot of observation while they're in those play group sessions of just how they're mm-hmm. interacting with each other and how they're flowing in a classroom with other children. So these children, you know, could either have socialization opportunities outside of their homes, or this is the opportunity for them. And so parents get to watch them and see what they want to work on, so that when it's time for them to go into a preschool setting or a classroom setting, that they have some foundational kind of things that they can work on with their child. It's really just an opportunity for them to explore. You know, that's really important for infants and toddlers. And so exploring how other people are doing things. Playgroups are a time for them to interact with other kids and for parents to also interact with each other. So they're learning from each other.
Let's go back earlier in the article in the newspaper last December. It said 40 families were presently at that time. How does a family become eligible? Who is eligible to be in this early Head Start program?
Yeah, it's a free program. And so I always tell people, even if you don't think you're eligible for the program, to apply, because you never know where in your life you'll be and at a certain time where you'll feel like you need some support with parenting and you may qualify for the program, you know, whether you've lost housing or a family situation with employment or something like that. So we always tell people to go ahead and apply. Mm-hmm. And then once they apply, we look at their income. So it's income based, and we currently serve 100% up to 130% of the poverty level. So if people are in that area, they would qualify first on the list. And then we also have some stress factors that are listed on our application, where if we have people that are, we have a lot of people that need to get in the program, the higher need, the higher risk families will get into the program first.
What would be a higher risk family?
You can say things like homelessness can be a struggle.
Okay.
I don't know, things like mental health. If they're facing some challenges in their families, you know, as far as domestic violence or mm-hmm. substance abuse. Those are things that are risky for families, especially if the parents are going through those kinds of things and how they're able to support their child and their development at the same time. It puts the child at risk too.
Well, I'm thinking earlier what Brenda said about leveling the playing field for the child. It's not always a level playing field for when you become a parent, is it? Mm-hmm. You know, I stop and think, you know, that maybe some of these families are also the families who are using the services of the food bank. So therefore, where's our next meal going to come from? Where's our next food? You know, so other sorts of concerns that possibly other families are not having to deal with can focus on the child. Possibly the child would fall through the cracks or that have really have that uneven playing field. I would think that this program, first of all, you're not alone. We're here to help. And the other thing I keep on thinking, I'm not a parent. I've never been a parent. And part of it that would scare me is that there's really no book that you can follow. And that anyway, then when you talk about parents sitting around talking to each other, I'm sure there's a lot of information being passed. And so any way that we can, the raising of the child is not just a, you know, one set of parents' responsibility, but we all chip in.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, parenting's hard. And having a person that you've developed a relationship come into your home, which is a sacred space for you, every week and just be there as your support person, not being judgmental, but more lifting you up and looking at your strengths and supporting you in your strengths is a valuable tool as a parent to be able to have.
Okay, this is Jim and Jack on the Thursday morning edition of The Morning Show with Corey Holman and Brenda Hammond from the Early Head Start program. And we're going to take a music break and regroup. We haven't mentioned how one gets in contact with the organization. We'll do that after a music break. Last week, Jack and I took a look at musicians, singers who passed away in 2017, and there were quite a few. And we hardly made a dent into our list. And so one who did pass away might not be that well known was Maggie Roach of the Roaches. Three sisters, Maggie, Suzzy, and Susie. Terry, Suzzy, and Maggie. And they first became on the scene as backup singers for Paul Simon's There Goes Rhyming Simon album, and I first ran into them in the early days of Saturday Night Live. They were the musical hosts like in 77 or 78. And Maggie passed away this past year, January 2017. And here's the lovely song called Married Men here on 88.5 KRFY, The Roaches.
The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing krfy.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource.
The Roaches with Married Men, looking back on Maggie Roach, who passed away in January of 2017. This is Jim and Jack, The Morning Show, the Thursday edition.
That was an interesting song, Jim. It's really pretty, but it's a little scandalous, too.
It's scandalous about having fun with the married men. Uh-huh. And I felt that way initially, but then I thought, I just think the song is so beautiful. Let's play it. But I highly recommend, if you don't know about the Roaches, they had about three or four albums out, probably a few more, but I only have a couple.
Mm-hmm. Was that song like a hit at the time?
That was the one that they performed on Saturday Night Live that I fell in love with them.
Any controversy at the time around the subject matter?
No.
Okay.
Nothing. I'm sure years later that probably the Roaches would probably change some of the lyrics, I guess. But only can you hear it on 88.5 KRFY, Community Supporter Radio for North Idaho.
Isn't that the truth? We're here in studio. This is Jim and Jack on the Thursday edition of The Morning Show. We're here with Corey Holman and Brenda Hammond from the Early Head Start program of Sandpoint, of Bonner County, of North Idaho?
We actually, we support the Lake Clint, we have Rathdrum program. Mm-hmm. We have a Coeur d'Alene program and the Shoshone County. So we have four different offices located in three counties.
Mm-hmm. Corey, how did you get involved in the program? Was this and are you from Sandpoint originally? Did you go out, study, come back? Or
I've actually been with the Sandpoint Center for a little over 10 years now. Prior to that, I lived in another state and worked with the Head Start program is where I started as a preschool teacher. Mm. And then when early Head Start came on board as a grant for us, I went into working a full day program for early Head Start. So it's been about 20 years that I've been with the program, following my mom's footsteps. She started in Head Start also.
Wow.
As a teacher too. So
I guess I'm curious about any differences that you may have seen. What's different about raising a child here in North Idaho than where you were before? And I don't know where that was.
I think, you know, working with the population of working with poverty looks different, I think, where from, you know, location to location. The parenting is always the same. The struggles are always the same as far as working with your child when you're in poverty. But I think there's some resiliency factors that people may have that are a little bit different, you know, and it really goes to community, how your community can support people who are struggling. And, you know, our community here has some great strengths. The Sandpoint Community Resource Center is fantastic. Our food bank is wonderful. You know, we have a lot of people that have our churches are, you know, really supportive. And so I think it just depends on what you have in your community to support those families. So.
I would like to go back when the music was playing. Brenda commented to me about no book for parenting, and you now you're smiling again. Do you want to talk behind your about your smile?
Yeah. Okay. I am a real advocate for the Circle of Security parenting program, and actually, our Early Head Start program has made it a goal. Years ago, to have each of our home visitors trained in Circle of Security parenting. And that is a program that came out of Spokane. There were three men, psychologists, that over a period of 20 years developed this Circle of Security parenting. And they did it through their experiences working with parents, all kinds of parents, parents who were living on the streets, parents who were living on South Hill. So the whole, a wide demographic spread. And they took what they had learned. It's based also on attachment theory, and developed a way to teach parents to understand better what their children's needs are, to understand the importance of them reflecting on their own reactions to their child's behavior, to be aware of automatic reactions that we all have because we bring them with us from our own childhood. And when we're backed in a corner as a parent, we tend to revert to whatever was done with us, whether we think it was a good thing or not, whether or not we vowed to never do that. Mm-hmm. We hear our own mother's or father's voices coming out of our own mouths. And learning to stop and reflect about that, be aware that that's a factor, and also be aware of how important our connection with our child is to them. That we are their anchor, we are their ambassador into this strange world that we all live in. So Circle of Security is remarkable as a parenting program in that it helps to develop those kinds of reflective skills. It's not a prescriptive program where, you know, if your child does this, then you do that. But it's developing that awareness mm-hmm. and that connection. And like I was saying before, kind of that back and forth. That communication that you hope will be there through their teenage years and really the rest of their lives. So as a grandmother now, I mean, I see that I have kids that are grown. I have grandkids. The same thing happens, you know, that if you develop that connection and that close relationship, it stays with you. And you see your children going out and being able to have those kinds of close relationships with other people. And then the most miraculous thing of all is you see them being parents and having, of course, amazing children.
Yeah, this probably is a tangent, but as a grandmother, Brenda, do you look at your children and say, I see me in them? You know, in other words, rather than, oh, you're just like your mom or you're just like your dad, how about from the parent's perspective, do you see in your children or in your child you? I mean, like, oh, I do that.
You know, I think what I see more is I see my children as parents doing the kinds of things with their children that I enjoyed doing with them when they were growing up.
So,
you know, going out into the woods and exploring, you know, doing art projects, building things, taking apart owl pellets, you know, just all kinds of, you know, the kinds of things you explore with your children that you enjoy.
This has been passed on.
Yeah, I see that.
Well, speaking of the outdoors, I do know that Early Head Start has partnered with Kinnick-Sue Land Trust.
Yes.
And do you want to go into a little bit of that, Brenda?
Well, this came about through, I mentioned before that we had decided to have all of our home visitors trained in the Circle of Security. We haven't been able to share that expertise with anyone except our enrolled families as because of our federal funding. It would prohibit us from opening it up to the community. So we decided that we were going to try and raise some money, write some grants, figure out a way to share this parenting program with the community at large, because we realize it's important for every parent, not just the parents that are enrolled in Early Head Start. So a conversation happened with Kinnick-Sue Land Trust, and a relationship developed with them because they are working to level the playing field in the community to give access to the outdoors and outdoor education and outdoor sports, give that opportunity to every child in the community is their goal. And we talked with them about, and this is something that we share, is an awareness of the fact that a lot of the brain development that happens with children happens through their interaction with the outdoors, and that children who don't have this, who stay inside, who are looking at screens instead of the sky, their brain develops in a whole different way. Kinnick-Sue Land Trust had been working with school-age children, and they realized through this conversation or relationship that we had with them that, oh my gosh, they needed to start much sooner. So they were willing to support 3 parenting classes in the community that we were able to offer free of charge to any parent in the community that wanted to enroll. And we just finished those up actually at the end of the last calendar year.
That's excellent. We're here with Corey Holman and Brenda Hammond with the Early Head Start program. And if a family is interested in becoming enrolled, can you we give some contact information?
Sure. They can go online to our website and fill out an application there. It's www.mshs.org.
Go through that.
MSEHS.org. So it's the acronym for Mountain States Early Head Start.
Got it. Okay.
We also are located on 137 McGee Road, across from the Lighthouse building out towards the Pondere and Kootenai area. So you can come on in and see our facility also and what playgroup, what the environments look like there. Or you can call us at 263-2569.
And do you take referrals?
Absolutely.
And you encourage families to stop by. Now, do you have a waiting list?
We keep a waiting list. We have some openings coming up because of children aging out of our program, turning 3 years old. And so we'll have some openings coming up. So we encourage people to always put an application in, whether there's a wait list or not, because it gets worked through.
Now, with the opening, does it follow an academic year cycle, or how does that work?
No, we're a year-round program. So home visits occur year round. We don't stop. We stop maybe for a week during the holidays for everybody to take a break and get refreshed. But it's a year round program. We're not on the school system.
Now, is the project Early Head Start totally government funded?
Yes, we're totally government funded. We do apply for grants. So like Brenda talked about, the funding that we received from Kinnick-Sue Land Trust, we also have applied for a grant through the Idaho Children's Trust Fund. So we'll be offering those circle security classes to the community at the beginning of April. Mm-hmm. So if people are interested in applying for those, they can also contact us at those at that phone number, 263-2569. And then we apply for grants to offer other services too.
What about the partnership with Kinnicksu Land Trust? You just finished a set of three classes. Mm-hmm. Is there a plans for another round?
Not in the works yet.
Okay.
We will continue our relationship with them.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to thank both of you for coming in. Come back again. At another time when we've sort of forgot everything we talked about, and because it's always good to be refreshed, isn't it? And to keep Early Head Start program, you know, on people's radar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on the map. I certainly appreciate both of you taking time out of this beautiful spring day. And we have a skylight here, and I just looked up. I saw it's gone now, but the sun was sort of semi-shining. And Corey, one more time, could you give us the phone number?
Sure. It's 263-2569.
Okay. You guys are doing a wonderful job in the community, and appreciate that.
If someone is interested in learning more, do you have any upcoming events or anything, any exposure to the public?
Well, you can always call and ask more questions. You can take a look at our website. We're going to be working in partnership with Head Start to in April for its Child Abuse Awareness Month. And so we're doing a Strengthening Families event. Mm-hmm. That's going to be held on the 27th. And we're looking for vendors from the community that want to participate in supporting families, want to show their support for families. And they can contact us at that number also, or the Head Start program. And we're hoping to put on an event that families can come to, not just Early Head Start and Head Start families, but other families, and see the support that they have in the community.
This is late April?
Yeah, late April, April 27th.
Maybe we could have you and somebody from Head Start come in to talk mm-hmm. about it in early April.
That sounds great.
Would that work?
That works.
You'll be getting an email from me.
Okay, thank you.
Corey and Brenda, have a great day. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
We're going to do a music break on this date, February the 8th, 1969. One of the first supergroups was formed, and we'll talk about it after the song. The group is Blind Faith, and here is Can't Find My Way Home.
Thanks for listening to the KRFY Morning Show. For copyright reasons, we can't reproduce protected music on the podcast edition of The Morning Show. But feel free to tune in live at 8 a.m. at 88.5 on your radio dial, or listen anywhere in the world by streaming us through our website, krfy.org. If you listen live, you can hear the full program, including musical breaks. While you're visiting krfy.org, consider tapping that donate button and help keep KRFY providing unique quality radio in North Idaho. Thanks for your support. We now return to the show.
That Blind Faith formed on February the 8th, 1969, and they released only one album, and that was in August of 1969, and they were the first of the supergroups.
And define that, Jim. Why are they so super?
Well, it's that they were put together after they had already established identities by performing in other groups. For example, Eric Clapton and Ginger Baker were with Cream, mm-hmm. and Steve Winwood found his way there through Traffic. Interesting. And then Rick Gretsch was not necessarily with a band, but he was a musician that came across Eric Clapton when Clapton was with the John Mayall Blues Breakers, and came across Steve Winwood when he was with Spencer David Group. And so the four of them released an album that came out in August of 69 and did quite well. And then after that, we had groups like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and then added Young. And then through the 70s into the 80s, a group like Asia, where people who established careers in other bands came together.
Yeah. That it does sound like, well, it's, I suppose it's just Mr. Winwood, but it sounds like it reminds me of Traffic. a lot. Very ruminant. I mean, more so than cream. Anyway,
What's interesting, you take cream, for example, you think, oh, Eric Clapton. But then you discover Jack Bruce did most of the vocals on. Mm-hmm. And there, of course, then there's Ginger Baker slamming away on the drums and doing a great job. But Eric Clapton was not the lead vocalist for Cream. So it's by no stretch that Rick Gretsch was a bassist. I don't know if he was known for his vocals, but definitely Steve Winwood was the vocal force behind Blind Faith.
Well, anyway, let's talk about what's going on here now and not there then. Let's change the subject.
Good segue.
Yeah. Here we are. You're listening to The Morning Show, and we just said goodbye to Corey Holman and Brenda Hammond.
They're doing a great job, aren't they?
Aren't they? Yes, from a Mountain States early head start. Coming up this weekend, let's start with tonight. Coming up tonight, open mic with Kevin Doran at McDuff's Beer Hall. McDuff's welcomes local artists for a fun and open night of playing at the Beer Hall from 6 p.m. till 9 p.m., positive environment to share your passion, or just come take it all in. All levels of performers are welcome. The set will be recorded live, and artists will have access to the audio. How about that? Plus, an opportunity to work with a professional sound guy who will mic you up. It is 21 and older because it is at McDuff's Beer Hall, but it is a non-smoking environment. Also going on tonight, Music with the Lowest Pair. Taken Time presents The Lowest Pair. They will be here in the studio at 4 o'clock this afternoon, if you're interested in having a listen to them beforehand. Then the show itself starts at 6:30. Doors open at 6 p.m. in the Little Panada Theater on First Avenue. I played a little bit of The Lowest Pair the other night on the local music show, The Norwester, and I thought they were... They're really good.
They have a couple YouTube videos that I checked out last night. And so if you want to check out and see what they look like as well as hear their music, go to YouTube, The Lowest Pair. And that is in the Panada Little Theater. And I want to mention what's going on in the Big Theater on tonight, the 8th. The 9th and all day Saturday. You really should go to the Panada website. It's the Oscar-nominated shorts. And if you've never been to them, boy, is it just simply opens your eyes. You think all movies are an hour and a half long or two hours long. There is incredible talent being demonstrated in these films. Now, tonight at 7 o'clock, live action shorts. Now, there's three categories: animated, documentary, and live action shorts. Live action shorts are just like movies, only shorter, with people playing roles. That's tonight at 7. Tomorrow night at 5:30, you have the animated shorts. And then at 8 o'clock, documentary shorts program A. They've broken up the documentary program to programs A and B. On Saturday at 2:30, there's going to be three things on Saturday. At 2:30, live action shorts. At 5 o'clock, documentary shorts program B. And then at 8 o'clock, animated shorts.
And these on Saturday, so on Saturday, you can go check out almost everything.
In fact, I have volunteered. Mm-hmm. You'll see me down there for all three of them because I don't know how many years the Panada has been bringing the Oscar-nominated shorts, but I walk away going, wow, I just wish more people could see. And what's interesting about them is you might not like one, but sort of like KRFY. If you don't like the tune we're playing with Otto, Wait until the next one. Mm-hmm. Same thing with these Oscar-nominated shorts, that there is such a range and a breadth and talent that is displayed that I highly recommend it. Go to the Panada website if you want all of the details. But tonight, it's live action shorts at 7. Tomorrow night, Friday at 5:30, animated shorts and documentary shorts program A at 8. And then Saturday, live action shorts at 2:30. Documentary shorts program B at 5 o'clock and animated shorts at 8 o'clock. And you can buy a ticket that gets you into all of them.
So, okay. I'm still a little confused, but obviously we're just going to have to go down to the Panada and find out more.
Absolutely. Go to their website. But I will tell you, if it's like anything like previous years, you will not be disappointed. And I think it's just such a treat that the Panada is bringing this to our community.
It is cool. It's why do all films have to be? Why does any visual art form have to either be a 2-hour movie or a television series that's ongoing? Can you just tell a story in 20 minutes? I think you can.
It's sort of like you have novels and short stories.
Yeah.
And one could look at these as short stories. That's at the Panada Theater, the 8th, 9th, and 10th.
Also going on tomorrow night on the 9th at the Idaho Poor Authority, Muffy and the Riff Hangers at... That's at the Idaho Poor Authority at 203 Cedar Street from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Music at the Winery, that's the Pondere Winery with Brian Jacobs from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. And here's one that I can't believe it's already upon us, but the POAC Open House is here from 5:30 p.m. until 7 p.m. on the second floor of the Cedar Street Bridge. You can finally go and see the new POAC office, the new art exhibit, and also enjoy a glass of wine and hors d'oeuvres. The board, the staff, volunteers, and artists will be there. Plus, bring your ideas for future events and how they can better serve the community. That's the POAC Open House on the second floor of the Cedar Street Bridge, where they have their new offices at 5:30 p.m. tomorrow, the 9th.
And while we're on POAC, we want to remind everyone that on Sunday, the 11th of February at the Panada Theater, POAC is bringing the Montreal Guitar Trio as part of POAC's performance series, Virtuoso Classic Guitar Trio, and they're going to pay a tribute to the great composers of Spanish music. That is this Sunday at the Panada Theater at 7:30. I'm sure that there will be tickets available at the door. So that's another POAC. Not only are they moving offices, and Hannah has kept us, in tune with the movement over to the Cedar Street Bridge, but also this Sunday, the Montreal Guitar Trio.
We're out of time, Jim, but there's lots of musical events going on this weekend.
And tonight here on 88.5 KRFY. Join Jim Healy. That would be me, at 9 o'clock for the first hour of the folk show. I'll be coming to you live. And tonight I'm going to do folk songs with the word mourning, not mourning like sadness, but mourning like a time of day in their titles. And I've got a whole bunch of good ones lined up.
Well, okay. And also, Laissez les bons temps rouler. Tuesday is Mardi Gras. Did you know that?
What?
I think so. This coming Tuesday. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, no, you are absolutely correct. Yeah. Well, this is Mardi Gras weekend, and then we're heading into, on the 13th, we have Shrove Tuesday, Fat Tuesday, and then, of course, on the 14th.
Oh.
Don't forget, get that card and flowers. Annie is waiting.
Yeah, that's right.
Valentine's Day.
I know, yeah.
Jack, you get over that cough.
I'm going to do that. All right. You've been listening to 88.5 KRFY. Please continue to do so. It's time for Bird Note and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long here on 88.5 KRFY Pondere.